This is Circulating Ideas. I'm Steve Thomas. Back in episode 87, John Bracken came on to talk about the Knight Foundation's news challenge on libraries. And today, John's back to talk about the winners of that challenge. There are 14 of them. They're diverse, and I think they're all going to be inspirational for you. And I hope we all hear more about these projects in the future. So let's get to the conversation. And if you want to follow up more on this, you can go to newschallenge.org. John, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Steve. Thanks. It's good to be here again.
So the last time you were on, you were announcing the Knight Foundation's News Challenge on Libraries, and now we are back to announce the winners. And there are...
Doesn't seem like it was that long ago, does it?
No, it does not. before we really get started, can you go ahead and just say tell listeners again what the challenge was?
So what's I'm at Knight Foundation, and Knight Foundation has worked on libraries for almost 50 years, going back to 1971. And the last few years, we've been focused on the innovation opportunities in libraries. We spend a lot of time thinking about what are Americans going to need to be active participants in their democracy going forward. And as we look at the rapid changes in terms of technology and everything that comes with that, we increasingly see libraries as a core set of institutions for that. So we're just wrapping up. This is the second innovation challenge that we've done focused on libraries.
And you had 14 winners. How many people did you have that put in suggestions?
We had just around 700.
Wow. That is a lot.
And actually, it's a little bit fewer than the previous one.
Oh, is it? Okay.
So that's one thing as we sort of reflect on the challenge. We're going to think about, is that the right amount? Should we have gotten more? Should we think about framing the challenge in different ways?
I was going to ask, did you do 14 winners last year too? Is it 14 is the number, or you just kind of have a certain, is it a monetary thing that is the limit? Like how do you decide how many winners you're going to have?
Yeah, the 14 represent the ones that we were most excited to drive forward with. We could have done more. And one of the things is we worked with about three dozen advisors from outside of the foundation, a mix of librarians and non-librarians, probably more, about two-thirds non-librarians who are passionate about libraries. And one of the senses we had was that, these are the 14 we were most excited about, and it was worth investing in those. And we're beginning to think now about what are some other things we might do to help not just invest in ideas as they come across, but also help libraries think more robustly across their organizations. What are some ways they can help adopt new practices, new approaches?
Right. So let's go ahead and talk about the winners for this year, and then we'll talk about how we can move forward into the future. So you kind of have two tiers of winners, where you have ones that have larger investments that I guess are more developed programs, and then you have nine that are early stage ideas that I guess are just sort of, I guess it's in there in the name, it's a little more early stage. You're just kind of testing out to see if those will pan out, I guess, is how a good way to say it.
Yeah, something we've adopted in the past. One thing that we learned was that it's often easier to try an idea than it is to either plan for the idea, consider an idea, or to try something big. And often we found a lot of initiatives would start off with a set of assumptions that once they started building and testing it, they realized they weren't really valid assumptions. So we've created a program that we've done for a while now focused on providing a little bit money at the upstart, a little bit of advice. We introduce people to how to test ideas with actual humans and some some principles of design thinking and give them a slightly shorter runway than we do with our other projects.
And then so
each of those get a $35,000 grant.
And did you do that last year as well?
We did.
Okay.
Yes.
And so with those ideas, if they do pan out, do they then apply for like the larger amount later, or is that, how does that work?
They can. Yeah. I mean, one thing we've seen in past news challenges is a lot of the previous, some of the big winners are things that we helped fund or test ideas at an early stage.
Okay.
And frankly, what we're also really interested in is helping these institutions and kind of develop some the kind of a lessen their fear of failure and, mm-hmm. and develop the muscles it takes to experiment and test ideas and to share what they learned. And then, yes, and we're able to help when we see something that really feels like it's worthy of doubling or tripling down on it. We can do that as well.
Okay. That's a lot of times why libraries just can't afford to make those leaps sometimes. And so that really helps just to be able to give that cushion kind of here's, if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out, but it was a good experiment. You can even learn from why it didn't work out and maybe apply it to something in the future. So.
And that's one of the key things we're beginning to see be adopted by different libraries, both academic and public libraries, is that notion that not everything needs to be a success, not everything needs to be a hit. We can try some things on the edges, learn from them, and share that with colleagues across the field and adapt it into our own programs.
Well, that's kind of like the, is it Google that has the 20% projects where they get their engineers are allowed to do something else 20% of their time and just their own projects. And sometimes they work out into something, sometimes they don't.
Exactly. I mean, I think in the world that we're living in, where things are changing so quickly, where new technologies and new approaches, you know, new learnings advance in various fields with such an exponential growth, that we need to have developed the skills that allows us to test approaches and to borrow from others more so than we've had in the past.
And the early test idea projects all have, as you said, $35,000 prizes. For the other ones, was that part of their request that they put in, that they had a budget as part of that, or do you all help them set those budgets? Like how do you decide what gets awarded to the larger projects?
Both. I mean, we ask folks when they get to a final stage, we ask them to submit a budget.
Okay.
And then we evaluate the budget based on what they're trying to achieve, and they tend to be roughly in the same time frame of a year to 2 years.
Okay.
So each of them is a little bit different, but the funding hovers around the same kind of, you know, they're all between 100,000 and I guess about 350,000.
Right.
They're all between 150,000 and $400,000.
Okay, so let's start talking about the projects. We're going to go. I want to go through those $35,000 test projects.
Sure.
First. The first one, and I'm not saying this because they're local, but ATL Maps. That's from Georgia State University. Can you talk about that project and what's going to go on with that one?
And Emory's involved with it as well.
Oh, I used to work at Emory.
Well, there you go. That was not part of our consideration, but that's a really good.
I promise they're just alphabetical on the list here. I promise they ATLs.
No, it's something that we're really excited about. I mean, the collaboration is something that we value a lot through all the projects that we work on, or not just libraries. So the fact that the two schools are coming at this together is something that I think we're hoping to see more of. So that was, you know, that was a big part of it. And right. The fact that it's not on one of the coasts, or at least not one of, you know, the Northeast coast,
mm-hmm.
is also really appealing. I think for the last few years, we've seen a lot of work around mapping and creative articulation of using geospatial data to tell stories. And that's mm-hmm. what that's what this would be, right? Is helping to leverage different types of library collections to help people tell stories about what's happening around them and tell that story, not just in text, but through media and through geospatial visuals.
Yeah, I like that. That's one of the themes we're going to hear over and over again over these 14 projects is there's a lot of telling stories, there's a lot of connecting, there's a lot of community, and all that kind of stuff. The perfect things that I think we talked about in the last episode that libraries and journalism kind of have in common, that's kind of what we do. So.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. I think that's one of the trends that we're seeing and looking to see more of, that with, you know, so many Americans, I mean, all of us, being at times overwhelmed by the rapid changes in tools and technologies and the ways we can tell stories, that libraries can be a key resource in helping to bridge that divide.
And another issue big in libraries is copyright. And the next project is called Can I Fair Use It? It's just crowdsourcing fair use knowledge. And that's going to be at Harvard.
Yeah, so that's part of the Harvard Library Innovation Lab, which is something that we've looked at in the past and have been talking to for a while. And so we're really excited to have them be part of the conversation. And, you know, again, and it not unlike the one we just talked about, I think that this is going to be about helping testing the idea of what would it take to help connect people with subject expertise in copyright to people in and to patrons and librarians who have questions about gaps and how we manage fair use and different intellectual property issues.
Yeah, and some of those are, I mean, I like that a lot of these are building tools for other people to use too. It's not just let's build a big thing and everybody comes to use our thing. It's kind of, it's everybody can adapt it for themselves too and work together. So,
yep. I mean, and that, again, I think that's one of the muscles that librarianship helps develop. And I think that's one of the reasons that we've been excited to engage with the field.
Right. And the next project is called Digging Deep, a digital extension education portal for community growth. And that's Pennsylvania State University.
Yeah. So that's about, again, trying to bridge across academic libraries and what does it look like to really work with local communities in particular around research and resources. So the notion of, you know, are there ways to make things like journals and other type of academic research more applied in communities outside of the academic walls?
And that we're going to find, as with the next one, it's the first of many from Pennsylvania who are obviously very big on library projects.
Yeah, that's true. There's Penn State and plus three from Philadelphia.
Yeah, so the next one is the Free Library of Philadelphia Culture Share, and that's obviously the Free Library of Philadelphia. Can you talk about that project?
Yeah, so that's about, we had, this was a trend we saw not just in the winners, but in some of the many of the applications we had, which is how might we better connect libraries with local cultural resources? And so this is about introducing notions of subscription, also as a model to deliver information from libraries to patrons. So is there a role for libraries to curate content that could be shared with people in Philadelphia, and a lot of that content they'll be looking to build off of are from local artists in Philadelphia. And Philadelphia is one of the cities that we at Knight Foundation really focus on, so we're excited to test that one out.
That sounds great. And it's sort of on another end of that, for civic data, there's another project, Future-Proofing Civic Data, which is at Temple University, which is also in Philadelphia.
Yeah, it is. And so Philadelphia has been one of the leaders nationally in thinking about civic data and making it applied. And actually, we've, through the News Challenge and through our presence in Philadelphia, have been involved with that. So, you know, and again, it's also something that we've seen. The previous News Challenge, we made a grant to the city of Boston to work with Boston Public to make civic data, city-owned data in Boston, more usable to Bostonians. Mm-hmm. And so this builds off of that trend that we're seeing more and more of, which is as this new field of civic data emerges, libraries are a key resource and collaborator for those projects.
And the next project is the Indigenous Digital Archive, and that comes from the Museum of Indian Arts and Culture in Santa Fe.
Yeah, so that one was again, is also about, it has a bit of an archival focus, which is something we've seen a lot in the past, slightly, you know, there's a lot of interest, right, from the Digital Public Library of America is one major example of mm-hmm. how do we do a better job of making useful the materials that we all have in various forms archived in photos and things like that. And so this will experiment with tools that'll make it easier for people to annotate and tag and make searchable some of those archival materials.
Yeah, that's great to make all that more available to everybody. Better. The next project is a little more story-oriented, like we had talked about earlier. It's called Literacy, Art, Technology, and Community at MIT. Can you talk about that project?
Yeah, so it's at the Media Lab at MIT. And one thing we've worked with the Media Lab for a while, and one thing we've picked up is there's an emerging interest among libraries and librarianship in that community. So that's something we're really excited about is experimenting, is how do you take the technology and engineering focus of a place like the Media Lab, and are there opportunities for building bridges between that approach and libraries? And so this is to pilot out a tool called Storyscape, which again also will be a visualization storytelling experiment based on local artwork in public libraries.
That's great, because it's kind of connecting different kinds of art throughout the community in different ways and combining them together and mixing them all up, and that's great.
Yeah, and again, I mean, not just for this one, but for all of the projects, but particularly the ones that we're talking about at this stage, we don't expect, you know, when you and I talk about these a year from now, I expect we'd be able to say, well, actually, they started off trying to do A, and they ended up doing 73, right? They're going to learn things, they're going to they're going to adapt what they're doing, and they might end up following threads that they didn't anticipate at this early stage. And that's part of what our goal is here, is helping to encourage people to feel comfortable enough to experiment and test things out, and not feel like it's incumbent upon them to produce exactly what they're imagining they might produce today.
Yeah, I mean, because sometimes you can have an idea for something, but once you get your kind of hands dirty and start getting into it, you realize that it's not going to work the way you thought, but it'll still work, it's just in a different way. So yeah, you need that. You need to get into it. So.
Exactly. And one thing that we found is people were coming to that realization a year or two after starting the project.
Right.
And so part of the goal in this approach is to accelerate that moment of coming to those insights, and to give people the freedom to come to those insights, so they don't have to feel like they're trapped.
Right. And we're going to come back to Philly one last time for this other project, the People's Media Collection, and that's from PhillyCam. What is that project?
So Philadelphia has a really robust local access cable community, right? So we're going back for years, maybe decades in Philadelphia. And so this is a collaboration between that community, between the Philly Local Access Network and the Free Library of Philadelphia. And is there a role, can you use that combination of that relationship to introduce media production techniques and community-based reporting?
And that sounds like a great project. The last one comes from Dartmouth College. The last of the early stage projects comes from Dartmouth, and it's Unlocking Film Libraries Through Discovery and Search. So this is another one of those archiving kind of projects. And
yeah, and this is something that could be really useful for media scholars or for others. But they're going to test software that will make it easier for us to search what is in film. So if you think about the the trend and the needs for more visual and media-based storytelling, this is going to be an experimentation with tools that would make it easier to locate materials and then be able to build off of it.
So let's go into the full project winners now. Those were the 9 early stage ones, and those all sound great. And I hope we'll hear more from those people in the future, even if their project doesn't work out. Again, you can always learn something from some things that don't work out too. So the first one of those is very interesting to me. It's to improve access to knowledge and empower citizens, amplify libraries and communities through Wikipedia, which is always a fun issue with librarians of how we deal with Wikipedia. Yeah. And I think this is going to deal with some of that sort of fuzziness sometimes people have. So what is this project? And it's led by OCLC.
Yeah, so this is something, again, we've seen in the past, there's, when you think about digital resources, there are few things that have the reach and engagement that that Wikipedia does.
What is it, like 15% of internet people a day?
Exactly.
Just that one.
Exactly.
Site?
Yeah. And so, but we also know that it's complicated and not easy, and that the community aspects of Wikipedia can be really tricky. And so this is building off some experiments that have already happened in New York, and I think in Washington, D.C., of what are some ways we can work between the Wikipedia community, which is almost all volunteer community, and librarians to increase, to broaden the reach of participation. I mean, one of the things I think that Wikipedians and people who care about Wikipedia have been concerned about is the gender split, the overabundance of men as Wikipedia editors, and sometimes the real barriers that come to being an active participant in a Wikipedia community. So, I'm hopeful that this will be part of at least begin to address some of those concerns. It's such an important resource for all of us that I think the more that institutions and people like librarians are involved with it, the more vital it will be.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I'm the first person to say that the greatest strength of Wikipedia is its greatest weakness too, is that anybody can edit it and things like that. And so, but that's what makes it so great too, is that everybody can work together and kind of do whatever they want with it. But there's a fact-checking thing that makes librarians, have a little thorny relationship with it sometimes. But I think something like that, I always loved the idea of Wikipedia, and I use Wikipedia a lot even in my work, sort of as a starting point sometimes, and always kind of say, we'll not depend on this completely. We'll check what we see here, but the stuff like this will help because it'll make the what's on Wikipedia more reliable. Hopefully.
Yeah, and I think part of the exciting thing about Wikipedia is the participatory aspect of it. And I think getting I think increasing the touch points that librarians and people with library skills have with online tools, with broad popular online tools like Wikipedia, is just going to make everyone stronger, not just Wikipedia, but I think the types of negotiations and conversations that it takes to engage with Wikipedia, I think both sets of communities will potentially be stronger as a result of this collaboration.
And what's nice is, like you said, we can work with the Wikipedia community. We don't even necessarily have to work with Wikipedia, the company, to do this kind of stuff. It's like you kind of just engage with the community who is actually doing the work of Wikipedia. No offense to the people who are paid by the Wikipedia company.
Yeah, and the Wikipedia company is a nonprofit. So
right,
it's also,
right.
For us, it's really exciting because it's the most, by order of magnitude, the most significant online nonprofit experience, and we've worked with them in the past. But I think you're right. It's the community is the key resource here.
So the next big winner is called Our Story: Content, Collections, and Impact in Rural America, and that's in San Francisco. And the organization is History Pin. What is that project about?
Yeah, so History Pin has been around for a while, and in particular, this is going to be about, again, similar, not unlike some of the projects we were talking about earlier, but trying to think about the building connections between using tools to connect libraries with locally based storytelling and culture. And so, you know, they're gonna do a pilot that partners. I guess they're gonna work with about 12 different rural communities, starting off in New Mexico, North Carolina, and Louisiana, to work with public libraries. And HistoryPin is an online tool. And I think, again, the value in the collaboration is that they can work locally in person through the public libraries. And they're also collaborating with the Digital Public Library of America, which has a lot of those relationships with locally based libraries and archives, which is going to allow them to develop tools to do storytelling and visualizations and create exhibits through their local resources that they might not have been able to do otherwise.
Yeah, I was going to say it's great to work with the rural libraries because they often don't have the funding to do things like this. And one of the few projects we'll talk about in a minute talks about funding a little bit more, but that's what projects like this really can help out with those kind of libraries. So.
That's right. And I think, the one word that comes up a lot in all of our work is the notion of networks. And I think in some ways that's what this is trying to through collaborating with something like DPLA, which in many respects is a network driven project. Can we build connections across types of institutions and libraries who otherwise might not be working together?
And I should say, I said the project is based in San Francisco, but HistoryPin, I believe, is based in San Francisco. The pilot will be going across New Mexico, North Carolina, and Louisiana for
exactly
the libraries they're actually working with. So
exactly.
I was going to say, San Francisco is not rural. So.
Exactly.
And so the next project comes from the Dallas Public Library, and it's Storytellers Without Borders, Activating the Next Generation of Community Journalists Through Library Engagement, which, again, seems like a really good project for you guys to help fund because it's a connection between libraries and journalism.
Yeah, this is exciting. It's working with the Dallas Morning News, which we've worked with at Knight Foundation in the past as well. And there's a component of working with students and through the collaboration with the newspaper, is there a way to better introduce students to concepts of information literacy and nonfiction writing and storytelling. So again, this is another example of a collaboration of two different institutions, both of which have a high degree of relevancy for their residents, but that don't always come together, a newspaper and the library.
Well, and working with young people to work on the future of this stuff too. I mean, so it's not just improving it now, it's working with the younger people so that is it with high school students, right?
It's with high school students, that's right, and with Dallas public branches. And I think there's also going to be a mentorship component to it, and so it'll be interesting to see what types of guidance and directions do the students get, and what might this will be one will be interesting to look back at the impact of in 10 or 20 years to see where what skills and networks the students develop as they grow.
And the next winner also works with children and families both. It's from the Brooklyn Public Library, and it's Tell a Story, library-based video visitation for children of incarcerated parents. And I think this is a really important project. Can you talk about what it's going to cover?
Yeah, this is exciting. So Brooklyn Public is looking at how to use the tried and true notion of story time, right, which is how so many of us, either as children or as parents, interact with the public library. Can they use that approach in a very intentional way where they're focused on improving the literacy of the children? Can they use that also and connect children who have family members who are incarcerated through technology, and they're going to start off in a dozen branches in Brooklyn to enable families to come together, use the platform of the physical place of the library to connect with family members in other places through storytelling, through singing songs, and giving them a point to connect across geography and across bars.
And do you know how it works if they're working with this may be too detailed, but like with the local prison systems, or is it through any prison system? Do you know at that level of what it is?
I don't know. I don't know how advanced they are and which they've developed partnerships with. I will say that it's also an exciting time for Brooklyn Public Library. I think mm-hmm. that, you know, they're growing, they're stretching, they've added, actually I mentioned earlier the history of, in Philadelphia of civic technology and data and working with the community there. A woman named Story Bellows, who was part of that team in Philadelphia, is now helping to lead innovation efforts at Brooklyn Public and is a part of this project. And so there's a history there of thinking creatively and across organizational lines to try to collaborate that we're excited to see what comes of it.
Yeah, and hopefully that people can learn from this one and expand this kind of project out to other libraries and do that in the future, because it's obviously an issue a lot. So,
and I think it, even further than that, you can imagine, you know, experimenting with the library as a place to introduce digital tools for virtual presence. So whether, you know, other libraries might experiment with can we use technology that wouldn't exist in people's homes to connect people with family members in other countries? Are there other ways of virtual presence? And as, you know, the video connecting technology becomes just more and more advanced, what might other experiments might we do to leverage the library as a place to connect with other people?
Well, I was even thinking, I mean, parents who were deployed overseas or something from in the military, I mean, connecting things like that too. So yeah,
exactly.
Any family that are separated from each other, we have the technology now kind of to connect those people together. So,
and also increasingly we're seeing advances in how we think about story time and the importance of,
yes.
Connections to vocabularies for young children, especially even 0 to 3. And so I think they'll be leveraging a lot of the emerging understandings of what works with those approaches as well.
Yeah, all the early literacy stuff, yeah, is a big push now in our public libraries. So, the last project is another big important one, because as we mentioned earlier, especially rural libraries, but all libraries kind of are having funding issues a lot, but it's a little bit better now as the economy is increasing, but we've always kind of had, even in good economic times, libraries are never greatly funded. So this last project is called Visualizing Philanthropic Funding for Libraries, and that's through the Foundation Center. So what will that project do?
Yeah, so that's good. You just described it pretty well. And it's going to help libraries understand how funding, where funding is, you know, what the focus of that's a major mission of the Foundation Center generally, is as a resource to help people in nonprofits understand the funding landscape, and areas of opportunity that they might not have otherwise. I worked at a nonprofit before working in foundations, and we spent a lot of time at the Foundation Center website. And so this specifically will be testing out projects, again, collaborating with DPLA to examine how they might better tell the story of, help libraries better understand, and library friends associations and the like, better understand opportunities for funding.
Okay. That project, all the projects, all 14 projects were great projects. And this episode is being released at the very beginning of ALA. Can you talk about what kind of presence Knight Foundation is going to have at ALA and how you're going to talk about these projects there in case somebody listens to it right away?
Yeah, that would be great. Please come. We have a series of events we're going to be doing it at DPLA. We'll be introducing at least the 5 big winners and the other ones if they're in Orlando at ALA on Saturday the 25th at I'm going to pull it up right now. I'll tell you which room in case there's an overlap between people at the Hyatt Regency Ballroom T.
Okay.
And I should say people can go to knightfoundation.org or find KnightFDN on Twitter, and we'll share all that we're doing at ALA. We actually will be sponsoring panels from previous News Challenge winners, beginning Saturday morning with Peer-to-Peer University and Chicago Public Library talking about their project. I think we've got maybe about half dozen different panels that we'll be part of throughout ALA annual.
And do you have a booth in the exhibit hall as well?
We do not.
Okay.
We do not. We're focusing most of our time on these these events.
Yeah, so if you want to talk to John or any of those winners, go to one of the sessions.
That's right. And I will, there is one at 1 p.m. on Sunday where we're going to have a panel specifically building off that grant we were talking about, a funders panel, where we're going to do a little bit of real talk from different foundations. I'll be there, Trevor Owens from IMLS, and Sarah Luttman, who consults with Wincote Foundation, will be there talking about what we see as funders in the library space. But we'll have a we'll put up a list of all the events we have going on at ALA early next or right around the time you hear this.
Okay, and so I kind of talked a little bit about or kind of community and connecting and stories, or kind of things that connect all these projects together. Was there anything else that you kind of see as a connecting tissue sort of behind all these projects, of what you think they kind of, something that they share of the as the winners?
Yeah, I think what we talked about earlier on, and I forget what we talked about off mic when we talked about on mic, but we talked at one point this morning about how important it is to be willing to experiment and how important it is to get out of one's own heads. I think so often, it's not just in libraries, we see this in lots of fields. We focus on our domain expertise and try to build off that. But I think a trend we're seeing across the board and increasingly in libraries is an openness to new ideas, you know, and a willingness to experiment. We talk about it as innovation is a verb, not a noun. In other words, that it's not just enough to come up with ideas, and innovation isn't just something you make, but rather it's a set of practices that seem to work to adopt and to get our heads around, our institutional heads around, how to be open to new ideas and serving people where they are. And so we've seen emergence of things like the Gates Foundation funded toolkit for library innovation, and that willingness to experiment and try new things in an intentional way, where you're focused on learning and creativity as part of the process, that's a trend we're seeing emerge.
Yeah, we also talked about wanting to hug Chewbacca off mic, so I was hoping you weren't going to bring that back up again.
That could be a whole other. You should do a whole other pot. You could do a whole separate your whole separate brand around Chewbacca.
So that's the big projects for this year, and but let's talk a little bit about how you go forward from here. Do you think you would do the challenge again? How else is the Knight Foundation thinking of helping to fund libraries and work with libraries in the future?
We've been thinking a lot about this. So we had a really great, I think I said this to you before too, but we had a really great set of advisors with us at the table. Again, probably roughly 2/3 or 3/4 were non-librarians. And the discussion we had with them in May, the people who helped us finalize the list of finalists and come up with questions, was one, both continued passion and interest in working in libraries, and also we really focused on some things we're hoping to see more of and some things outside of a challenge mode that we might think more intentionally about. So I think, you know, one of the things we're thinking about is funding ideas for, on our part, it's probably not enough for us just to fund ideas. Mm-hmm. It's not enough for us just to get up on a dais and say, hey, send us your best ideas. But for the field, how might we be part of efforts that are already ongoing, mm-hmm, to better introduce libraries and the people who love them to notions of how you go about generating and sustaining new ideas, rather than just funding projects on the edges of our institutions? What do we need to do to help those projects move in and really impact and be strategic and impactful to the core of those institutions? So, you know, we've begun to think about different things of, you know, should we help libraries? Are there ways, building off of things like that Gates funded toolkit I mentioned, can we help? Are there ways to help libraries understand what capacities they do and do not have? Are there ways that we could be better at including multidisciplinary perspectives in libraries? That's something that we see as vital diversity in terms of ethnicity and gender and sexuality, but and geography, but also of discipline practices. One of my friends, Joe Ito, who runs the Media Lab, who's also a Knight trustee, talks about anti-disciplinary practices, that as the world changes so much, we really need to be intentional about cross-cutting the different field-based silos that we've had. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we've begun to think of are there models we can borrow from other sectors, either in terms of fellowships or internships or externships that what might help libraries increase their fluency with other fields and their access to experts in other fields. How do we help drive cross-discipline collaboration?
And that's one of the other things we talked about off mic. I guess we should have been started recording earlier. is that was one of the reasons that I'm not attending ALA this year. But that's one of the reasons I like ALA, is because of that cross-platforming. It's more within libraries, but I mean, I get to learn from academic libraries and school libraries, yeah, and all these law libraries and all these different kind of libraries, where I, as usually, I'm thinking public library only. But yeah, being exposed to different kinds of organizations and different ways of thought can stimulate your own.
That's right. And we've seen that a little bit, again, because so much of our work is focused on journalism. About 5 or 6 years ago, we collaborated on a series of conferences with the O'Reilly Network and Google called NewsFoo, F-O-O. And that continues on as a project called NewsGeist, which is an annual convening of a couple of hundred people. And we do it with Arizona State, the Cronkite School at Arizona State University. And probably most of the people in the room are journalists or active journalists, but we try to also include a variety of other folks as well. And so, you know, one of the things where we've been discussing is, what does something like that look like for libraries? Is there a way to intentionally, either through convenings or through other approaches and other platforms, to create a more intentional way for the people within the library world who are thinking about what they need to do and what comes next, and combine them with folks whom they might not know otherwise, who might be approaching similar problems from different perspectives or from their own institutional perspectives. And so that's some of those things are what we're beginning to kind of think about trying to introduce.
Okay, you know, that's great to have just the kind of the continuing conversation and continuing to making it just an ongoing, regular part of what's going on, and not just a special, here's once a year we do this.
Exactly. Exactly. And we've seen that as something that, again, it's key across different types of institutions. It's not just libraries. But one of the places of feedback we received from our advisors on this challenge was, wow, libraries, including from librarians, is that libraries are much more likely to be siloed and to work with other librarians than other sectors are, that have more opportunities for cross-sector collaboration. We don't have an answer to that, so if people have ideas, please give me a shout. But we're going to start to experiment with that, I think, a little bit.
Well, I think you should start giving lots of money to podcasts, and then and I'll figure it out for you.
All right, let's talk.
All right, John, so where can people go to find out more about the News Challenge and about the Knight Foundation?
KnightFoundation.org and at Knight, that's with a K, K-N-I-G-H-T, F-D-N on Twitter. If folks are going to be in Orlando for ALA Annual, please come, and you hear this, please come say hi. And give me the secret CI handshake, and I'll respond likely. And my email is bracken@knightfoundation.org, B-R-A-C-K-E-N @knightfoundation.org. We're going to continue to work in this space for a while. And we're really committed to libraries as a key institution. And so this is just the latest chapter. And if folks have ideas or feedback or suggestions or critiques, now's the time to hear it as we begin to bake out our work for the coming couple of years.
Yeah, and congratulations to all the winners, and I'm looking forward to hearing more about all of them. If you want to also find John after the conference, he's the guy hugging Chewbacca at Hollywood Studios.
I am now going to bring my daughter's stuffed Chewbacca with me to annual, just to make it clear. I was looking for an excuse to do that. You just gave me an excuse.
All right, John, thanks so much for being on the show.
Oh, not at all.
Okay, bye. Circulating Ideas is produced by Steve Thomas in the suburbs of Atlanta. Find out more about the show at circulatingideas.com, including links to old episodes, transcripts, and how you can help support the show. You can find the show on Facebook at facebook.com/circulatingideas or follow it on Twitter at @circideas. To help others find the show, please rate and review the show on iTunes, Overcast, or your podcast app of choice, and keep circulating your ideas.